case, he really had no alternative, because the second point upon which he granted the writ, and upon which we say the Court of Appeals erred, had to do with the exceptions that had been leveled at the pleadings of the plaintiffs that were then outstanding, and the court overruled those exceptions. Now, first, I think to get the procedural aspects of the case either up front or out of the way or whatever, had the court done what they asked, sustained their exceptions as they complained of, the only remedy that he could have at that time was ordered a replea, which would have resulted in the second plea. Now, this was not a long delay from the plaintiff's standpoint. As the court knows, the case arose out of a failed apartment project in the Fort Bend County, and in which my client, Mr. Wingate, feels he was flim-flammed by a very close friend. And I, without consuming the time here, when the court reads the record, you see that in spades. It's almost an incredible abuse of a friendship, an incredible inducement to bring Mr. Wingate, a pharmacist, who didn't know come here from Sikkim, about an apartment project, and relied on his longtime friend, who I hope is not here today. I really will stand on the record that it was one of the rawest deals that any investor, and I've been in a few, have ever been drawn into. He knew nothing about that business, and Mr. Haggett did, and got him to sign a note for $2 million, upon which he's had to pass up on things just to get him the project. But
Mr. Cronzer, do you need the allegations in the second amended petition in order to support the judgment in this case?
Well, and let me say, Judge Heck, that when we now get down below the surface to the iceberg, the question substantively is whether or not, in the situation he found himself, as a 50% stockholder in this corporation that was going to build these places, whether he could assert the losses he paid for at all, or whether only the corporation can do so. Now,
but as I understood it, in the first petition, he sought only to sue derivatively. And in the second petition, he sought to sue individually. Could he have recovered the judgment that he got simply on the First Amendment petition?
Without acceptance, he could, let me say, if it had not been accepted to. But can I correct that, Judge Heck? The first petition, when you examined it after we depart the scene here today, you will see he never sued anybody but Mr. Hyback personally for the fraud that he had perpetrated on him. So that's why I say, had there been no exception, then he could have proceeded to the same judgment he did. The exception claimed that the damages he sought were damages that had been sustained by the corporation, and ergo under Commonwealth of Mass versus Davis and Article 5.14 of the Texas Business Corporation Code, only the corporation can assert those claims. Now, we disagree with that, disagreed with it at the time the exceptions were heard. And if I might bring the court up to speed, I know you read the brief, but there's kind of some internal complexity of how it generated. The suit was filed in which all of the claims, while the corporation was made a party, it was for purposes of injunctive relief and not destroying papers and documents, but not for the judgment, not for personal injury. Only claims were made in the pleading to which the exceptions were filed was that he had defrauded this man. He had breached fiduciary relationship. Even the man, Mr. Hyde, admitted that they were close personal friends. And he had induced him to come into this project, and he dumped the tunnel that he would not otherwise have ever gone into. The pleadings alleged, however, that if he hadn't taken this money off or dissipated it or misrepresented, that there would have been more money to have built the project, saved him on his personal notes and liabilities and all the other allegations. The court, district court, had that pleading before him as of December 29, 1986, some 2 years after the lawsuit had been filed. They only had it done on that denial. Then on the eve of trial, 3 weeks before, they filed their special exceptions, alleging that only the corporation could bring the case, or he would have to ask if the corporation bring it and have reasons for the refusal, before he could maintain it for the corporation as a derivative action. The district court disagreed with that on the basis, as the record will show, of the earlier decisions of the Supreme Court, this court, and the Commission of Appeals, that there is an exception to that rule. And that rule exception is that if the fraud or the wrongdoing or the overreach is brought home to that person personally, then he and the corporation have a cause of action for those damages. And let me see if I can isolate that a little bit more clearly. Assume Mr. Wingate, rather than it being some just starting up corporation to develop a particular project, had bought 50% of the stock in a running, going, existing corporation. No fraud in the inducement, no misrepresentations to give him not. Then it might well be true that all the damages resulting from the flimflam later developing corporation drainage and the whole smear would be a derivative and would be the corporation's own. But when, as the Stinnett case says, there is fraud in the inducement to get the man in the trap, that is a tort committed to him personally, and he can maintain the action personally from that standpoint.
If he has personal damages.
If he what?
If he has personal damages.
Yes.
Damages apart from the corporation.
As the record will show, that not only did he have personal damage, he put about $140,000 up front of his own money, invested in and continued in the project by the same misrepresentations that went back to the start. The judge did not find anywhere near the total damages that were sustained by him. But let me say what the Stinnett exception, what the Supreme, well, one Supreme Court, this court adopted it, opinion was adopted by the court. And after reviewing the same rules, in this case, this man owned a lease on a theater building in Dallas, and he and his partner got into a deal and organized a corporation, transferred the lease to it, and then dealt with a third party get their film. They were trying to upgrade their film, and they fell out, and the third party representing these takeover corporations said they'd never get any film again as long as he was alive, etc., etc. So they said they had to sell out, and they did sell out, and then sued the takeover company individually. And the Court of Appeals held that they could not maintain the suit in their individual capacity for the reasons we're exchanging here just had. But then the Supreme Court concluded that, and he was suckered into the deal, In applying these principles, we think it equally well settled that if it appears from the pleadings and the proof that the wrongful acts are not only wrongs committed against the corporation, but also violations of duty arising from contracts or otherwise, and going directly to the injured stockholder, the stockholder should be permitted to file and maintain a suit for injuries sustained as a stockholder and as an individual. Now that's the theory upon which the trial court acted.
Well, that's the quote from the Stennett case.
That is a quote from the Stennett. And let me say this, even Commonwealth versus Davis does bear